Hi, everybody. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to go through the first three real quick. I just made a couple of notes while I was sitting. The first step, outwardly, we might say they didn't get bad. We didn't get bad at all. We didn't lose much, if anything. What would they have in common with me or with us? It's really a mental and spiritual breakdown or a loss, so we can't see that. And there's a gentleman in the program that said when he first came to AA, that's how he felt. He'd go to a meeting and he'd hear, there would be a point where he could identify. Then all of a sudden, he couldn't identify anymore. And what he finally realized was that what they were telling him, what the speakers were telling him, is that this is what his life is going to continue to be like if he continues to drink. All right. When we're at the point in our lives that we just can't take it anymore and want to die, but are afraid to die, that horrible pain is what brings us to our knees, no matter where we are in our lives. And the second step, because we become ready to believe that we are alcoholic and the only way out is through AA, which is not a true statement, our way out, because we're here, is through AA, we then start to see a glimmer of hope. Not much more, but hope that we can get help and not end up in a mental institution. And the third step, become willing. As the days and weeks go by, we come to realize that we are sober and haven't had a drink for a while. I hadn't been without wine for 6 years. What a revelation that was. Does it really work to ask for help and thank him at night with the close guidance of a sponsor? Yes, it does work. She was my channel to sanity and the realization that there is a higher power that listens. Now, the fourth step tonight, this was kind of hard for me. You know, it's been a lot of years since I've come into AA, and I've done many, many, many fourth steps because that's what they say to do. You know, continue to take personal inventory. When you're wrong, promptly admit it. But see, there were lots of times that things would crop up in my life that I hadn't remembered. When I first did my fourth step. And so I would do it, you know. I would start back to the first time in my life when I had a bad feeling towards this situation that all of a sudden cropped up. And I would write forward, and then I would share it with either my sponsor or somebody that I was working with. I never was afraid to share any of myself with a new person, because my sponsor shared everything with me, and if it hadn't been for that, I probably would not have, I wouldn't have hung around because I thought myself so bad. But she did as many bad things as I did, so I thought, I'm okay. In doing the fourth step and looking at yourself, I didn't follow what the big books did. But I understand now how to do that. And it's really very simple. When they show you this, the fourth step in the big book, they show that you give people's names, and then you give the reason why you have the feeling about them, and then how does it apply to you? Did you have anything to do with that feeling? And you went through four things: resentments, fear, sex, anger, and in each one of those areas, you did the name and the reason and the defect and so forth. What I did was because my sponsor didn't explain that to me, and maybe back then they didn't truly 100% understand it, I don't know, but it's pretty simple the way Joe and Charlie explained it, and so now I understand it better. So any future girls that I'm working with that are brand new, I will explain how the fourth step is done according to the big book. I started out by remembering the first time in my life when I ever did have a bad feeling. And that was when I was 10 years old and I stole $5 from my mother to buy raffle tickets to win the Blessed Virgin at school. And I won the Blessed Virgin, but I'll tell you, the guilt of stealing that $10 was overwhelming, and I was afraid to come home from school for fear that she would find out that I stole the money, because my mother kept her envelopes, you know, with the exact amount of money in it that she was going to pay her bills every month. So she knew it was missing, but she blamed my father, because my father was an alcoholic and he used to steal money from her. And I moved forward from that, you know, in my life, about, you know, how I was as a person. And at the time I did the fourth step, I could only see the things that were really, that really stuck out. And what really stuck out is more when I was drinking. And you really are supposed to look, and when they say a moral inventory doesn't have anything to do with sex, it has to do with how you live your life. But I didn't understand that. I lived my life according to you. However you wanted me to be, that's the way I was. I had some terrible resentments. I had some terrible hate. I had some terrible anger. But I never knew how to describe it. I didn't know what words there were to say about how I felt inside. So I wrote mostly about how awful I was when I drank. So I wrote all the things that I did when I drank, and I wrote it in an address book, you know, one about this wide and this tall, and kept it under my mattress so that my daughters wouldn't find it. And most of it had to do with sex. You know, the way I carried on when I went out, the nameless faces that I spent time with. It wasn't about, you know, the people that resented me or the people that I resented. That came later. But the initial fourth step was where my shame and my guilt was the worst. And so once that came out and once I shared that with my sponsor, there was something that lifted, that I could learn how to be a nice person. I could learn that sex is a gift from God to be used in a giving and loving relationship and not for somebody to like me. And, you know, that was a big deal. And I told you last week about the person that knocked at my door in the middle of the night and wanted sex. And I thought, well, what's 20 minutes? Who's going to know? This was before, you know, this was before I saw who I was. And I started to the door and down the steps, and then I thought, well, I'll know and my sponsor will know. I've learned that much so far. And so I yelled through the door, I don't do that anymore. And it was a wonderful feeling to be able to say that and not feel guilty about it or worry that he wasn't going to like me anymore, because it didn't matter whether he liked me or not. He was my boss at work. So at any rate, probably some things are going to fall out tonight that it doesn't matter. Really, it does not matter to me what you know or don't know anymore, because I like myself so much and I like who I am. And I know I have everything in perspective today. So, you know, whatever falls out, falls out. Maybe it'll help somebody because I asked God to give me the words. Okay, so when the sponsor shared her defects, like I said, and her weaknesses, I could identify with that. And so it made me feel less fearful about sharing how I felt. I couldn't tell her everything. I could not tell her everything because it was too deep and I didn't even know how to say it. So when I was sober a while and saw what I'd done to my husband, I thought, you know, he was a good person. He really was. He wasn't a fantastic husband, but I wasn't a fantastic wife either. And I married him because I was comfortable with him, not because I loved him, because my love was the happily ever after from the movies, you know, Cinderella and Prince Charming and all the movies that just showed, you know, how wonderful love is and how it's everlasting, because that's how it ends, you know, that it's going to go on forever. And I believed that. So I, getting married, I was going to live happily ever after, whether I was madly in love or not. And I could also say that I got married to get away from my mother, because I had a love-hate relationship with my mother, and I never could stand up to her and say how I felt. So it was a relief to get away from it all. And the years that we were married, I was very intimidated by my mother and never could say anything. So I always listened to what she had to say, and deep down inside of me, the hate got deeper and deeper and deeper. And so and again, you know, all of the feelings that I had, I kept them all inside. No one ever knew how I felt. And that sickness just got deeper and deeper. And I could not explain it. I thought I was mentally ill. I really did. Although I once I divorced Bob, got a good job, and really wanted to be a good mother, drinking became the most important thing in my life. And then in taking my inventory, money became an issue. There was never enough money. I had a good job. I made money that could support us. But I could never, I don't know. I when I look back today, I don't remember anymore how I spent my money. But I know I went to the bars Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturday nights. And I know I got pretty intoxicated. And I know my money was very open to everybody. So I could have had it stolen, but it doesn't matter. There was never enough money. So okay, I just have a couple things to read, and then I'll share a story with you, and then I'll be done. How frequently we see a frightened human being determined to depend completely upon a stronger person for guidance and protection. This weak one, failing to meet life's responsibilities with his own resources, never grows up, and that was me. I always depended on somebody else for my happiness. Disillusionment and helplessness are his lot. In time, all his protectors either flee or die, and he is once more left alone and afraid. And that's the way I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, alone and afraid, full of fear. And it was because I had nowhere else to turn. It had come to an end. Everything had come to an end. It would be like being up against a prison or a closet and not being able to go anywhere or do anything. That was the way I felt, like I was suffocating. And I was afraid to live. And then when I talk to you about sex, it in page 70 of the big book, it says, to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. And that's why I always say in my lead, that's why I sponsored a lot of women. It took away sponsoring and sharing myself with others, took away the imperious desire, because sex was number one in my defect of character. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about how all that ended up and how it, how it influenced me. And I've never shared this from the podium, not because I'm ashamed of it, but because, you know, when we share from the podium, it's always in a general way. We don't have to get into details, because if anybody in this room has drank the way I drank, and when I describe myself in my life, you understand what I'm saying without me saying it. And so what happened to me was because of, and I'm not saying it's because of my life, you know, before I ever knew whether my father was an alcoholic, I can remember the paper boy. When I was like 10 or 11 years old, I had a crush on the paper boy. He was so cute. And, you know, I'd run out to the curb and maybe I didn't even comb my hair or change my clothes, because at that time it didn't matter how I looked. You know, I was too young. So there was always this thing in me that was attracted to the magic. And I went to an all-girls high school, and thank God I did, because I didn't have any trouble in high school. I had a wonderful 4 years. And any dates that I had, they were people that I knew from, oh, you know, the old dances, where we used to go. I loved to dance, and so a gang of us would go to dances, and we'd meet guys there, and they would ask us to their different proms. And so I did that in high school. I really had a good time. But when I was a junior in high school, I met the love of my life, and it was the magic that we see in the movies, the magic of love forever and ever. And I really was crazy about him. And we went together for about 10 months. And then, you know, he moved on. We were kids. He moved on. I couldn't move on. I could not move on. And so I carried that with me until I was 35 years old and came to Alcoholics Anonymous. He got out of high school. I got out of high school. I got a job. He got a job. He met a girl. They got married. I met Bob, I got married. After we got married, somehow or other, his mother got the four of us together to play cards or to socialize or do things together, because she knew that I was a very outgoing person. So that's what we did. And I was so excited to be in his presence all those years, but he never, ever knew. Nobody ever, ever knew, because it just was inside of me. And that feeling got deeper and deeper and deeper. I always said in my lead that I dreamt about this man, first of all, on my wedding day when I was walking down the aisle. I wished he could have seen how pretty I was. And then the other thing is that I would dream about him, and that we would be running in the daisy fields in Cleveland, Ohio. I was never sexual, never ever sexual, because sex at that point in my life was taboo. I was married. I believed in my vows. I believed I was going to be married forever. So any internal thinking stayed there. But somebody broke my heart, because they said there were no daisy fields in Cleveland, Ohio. So that ended that. So at any rate, his wife got very ill. His children, he had two boys by that time, and Bob and I were godparents to the oldest, and I started taking care of those children for him. And he'd bring them to our house, he'd go to work, he'd come home, he'd take the kids to his mother's, blah, 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 blah. And that was it. That was it. That's all that happened. But I was so happy to be in his life, doing for him what I always wanted to do, take care of him. So, needless to say, it was at his house, and he was the one that handed me a drink of wine one night, and that started my alcoholism. I know that the character defects were inside of me forever. I know that today. I see that today. And it all came out. It all came out during those next 6 years, including with him. I made a complete fool out of myself. I separated from my husband, moved to the west side of Erie, got a job, and from then on to when I quit drinking, my life was a shambles. I was not the names that you guys called me in the bars. I was somebody looking for somebody to love me and take care of me. And I always say in the beginning, there were some nice Prince Charmings, but they could never understand why on Friday night I would go out and find another Prince Charming. And that was part of my disease. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I shared all these things with my sponsor about the men, she said, "Bev, you've got to stay away from the men. You want to," and I told you this before too, "you're a noose around their neck and you want to own their soul." And it was true. It was true. I didn't know anything about love. I didn't know anything about relationships. All I knew was that how was I going to live without a guy in my life? But I wanted what this woman had, and I did everything she told me to do. In fact, there's one girl in this room tonight that knows because she's been sober longer than I have. But I was sober 1 year, and I was at Willow Run on Sunday morning, and Butch Pius, if anybody in this room knew Butch Pius, he came up to me and talked to me. I couldn't understand him. I'd seen the man around for a year, but he stuttered. I couldn't understand what he was saying. You know, and he was sober longer. He was sober 3 months longer than I was. And he was a very handsome man. He's somebody I probably could have been drawn to, but I didn't dare. I didn't dare. And so I never talked to the guys in the program. And these ladies over here can attest to that. And, you know, the men in my life in the program became my friends. I never went to bed with anybody in the program. And so therefore, I could hold my head up when I went to any meeting, because I just didn't live like that. And I never had to live like that again. After that night when I yelled through the door, I never had to live like that again. And so I, for 13 years, after I took the fifth step, we'll talk about the fifth step next week, I just wanted to, I guess, writing down everything in that address book, I saw who I was. I didn't quite understand how I was going to get rid of the fear and the pain and the resentment and the hate. I didn't quite understand that. But once I took the fifth step, then it began to lift. It began, that all that stuff began to lift from me. So I sat down with my sponsor, and like I told you, I didn't tell her everything, but I did go to a priest and start the annulment process so that my husband could remarry in the Catholic Church. And in doing that, I admitted that everything about our marriage was my fault and not his. I couldn't blame him for anything. He was who he was at that time in his life. He's got 30-some years in this program now, but back then, he didn't have to look at himself. He could be who he was and not have to explain it. But who I was is who I had to explain and tell the priest the things inside of me that I could never tell anybody else. And so in doing that, I was forgiven by the Catholic Church, and I was able to receive an annulment. And my ex-husband Bob, he went about his way and got married for the second time, but I think he's had three wives, you know. But at that point in time, he did get married in the church. So I think that's all I have. I hope I didn't miss anything. Like I said, it's very hard to go back and explain. And if you have any questions about how I was when I drank or the type of person that I was when I drank, feel free to ask, because it took me a long time to heal. A long time to heal. And it was my own doing, because I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, and I'm grateful for that today. I am grateful that I could look at me and see my part in every situation that ever happened in my life. I had a big part in every part of it. You know, there wasn't anybody else's fault. It wasn't my mother that I hated. It was myself I hated. You know, she was trying to tell me things that I knew I should be living. And I wouldn't listen to her. I hated her for even telling me how I should live or how I should spend money. You know, and when it finally hit me, and this didn't happen overnight. This was a few years. And so don't lose hope. You know, if you don't have that wonderful feeling when you're done with your fourth and fifth step, don't lose hope. You're just beginning a life, a most wonderful life that you're ever gonna have. And it comes from the willingness of the third step. And that is the most important thing, the willingness. And the prayer in this book, that tells us every day of our lives. And I simply say, open up my heart and allow you to work through me today. Now, I'll tell you one more thing that happened to me. Tuesday night, I walked into a meeting. I asked a question, and another girl in the meeting asked asked the same question in a different way. I was so furious with her. Somebody had given me a check, and I was so furious with her because she wanted money too. And when I asked her, "Are you really asking for money for this?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well," and I took the check and I tore it up. That's called being childish. I tore the check up. Like, well, if you want money and I got money, then I'm not going to take the money. So, this was Tuesday night. Now, when I first went home, I was very justified in what I did. I took her inventory. And to myself, I don't talk too much to my husband about those things. He knew what happened, but he left me alone. He had no comment to make. This morning, I got up, I picked up the phone, and I called her, and I said, I am so sorry. So even after all these years, you know, we're human. Things happen. But again, I feel very good about myself tonight. And had I not done that today, oh, for goodness sakes, Beverly, stop it. Had I not done that today, I wouldn't have been able to open my heart tonight. So I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Beverly. So now we'll open this up to our question and answer portion. So if anybody has any comments for Beverly in the form of questions.
Bev, thank you. I'm Mary Alice Miller, and I'm an alcoholic. Beverly, I found out a long time ago that she who waits for knight in shining armor always cleans up after the horse.
Hi, Carrie Alcoholic. You said initially you did your fourth step in the address book. What did you do? And you said that you had done several from time to time.
I wrote everything in my address book, and I initialed everything so that nobody else would, if they read it, they wouldn't understand what I wrote. And I kept it under my mattress. And then when I did my fifth step with my sponsor, I destroyed it.
The time after that, what did you do?
Did you go do
it the same way? Every time
No. I just have a tablet, and I'd write it all down and keep it with me, you know, because when you're doing that, you don't want other people to read it. And so you keep it with you or do whatever you have to do. What I would do at work, I had a garbage can at work, and if I came in the morning and I had something that was really bothering me, I would write it down on a piece of paper, and I'd put it into the garbage can, and I'd say to myself, now, if I want this back, I'll just open the garbage can and take it out. And believe me, if you do that enough times, it works. It really works. Did that answer your question?
I think so. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Beverly. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. I heard a lot from you about taking responsibility for your actions, finally realizing that you were the only one responsible for the things that you were doing. And I wondered, when you were dealing with sponsees and raising your girls, how you translated that to taking responsibility to your girls, but also, most importantly, to your sponsees.
Well, what I would do is I would take both sides. I would start out by why I felt the way I felt about my mother, say my mother, for instance, and then I would tell them that I would write down things, you know, do an inventory about my mother. And I saw that it wasn't her fault. I always thought the way I thought. And the resentment started when I was 10 years old. And, you know, the guilt. And then I'm then turning it around and blaming her. If she would have given me the money, I wouldn't have had to steal it. You know, rationalizing. You rationalize. You know, I'm 16 years old. I know everything. Why would she, you know, I came home from work one day. I go to school and go to work. I worked since I was 14 years old. And I came home from work one night, and she had a significant other in her life that was painting our house. And she had asked me to clean out my closet. Well, I was tired when I came home from work. I didn't want to clean out my closet. But she had told me several times. So I had a big nervous breakdown right in front of her. She slapped me, and I slapped her right back. That was very bad. Yes, it was. It was very bad. But I didn't see that until I did my fourth step and wrote everything out, you know, and saw that it wasn't her, it was me, and this thing inside of me that nobody was going to tell me what to do. And but again, I didn't know how to explain that. You know, the girls that I went to high school with, we got together every month. We still do. We're going to have our 70th or 60th anniversary reunion. And even them, they had no idea who I was. I was a good Ann Landers. I could tell them how to live, but I would never, ever tell anybody how I was living. I was just couldn't do it. I didn't know how. Did that answer your question? Okay.
Well, you've come a long way.
Thank you.
You know, I look at your skirt, and it ain't as short as it used to be. You know, you walk like a lady. You are a lady. I'm proud of you, and I hope you keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, Joe and I are good buddies too. We ran around together forever, but I never went to bed with him. I told you some things were going to fall out of my mouth tonight.
My name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
How long did it take you to do your first four step and later fourth steps, and how long do you expect your sponsees to spend on it?
Well, once I see that they've taken the third step and the willingness is there, then I tell them, go for it. You know, because the sooner you get it over with, the better.
How long did it take you to make the list?
Well, the list, it took me about 2 months to write, to think about everything and write everything down. You know, it was hard. It was hard for me to remember a lot of the things that I did or that happened to me that I, you know, I always blamed on somebody else. And the worst of it was the nameless faces. There were a lot of those, a lot of those. And once I looked at all that, I thought, boy, oh boy, you know, I really have a lot of work to do here. So it took me a couple of months, and then my sponsor and I got together, and it took a couple hours. When I do a fifth step with somebody, it takes a couple hours. Now, one of the girls tells me it took 6 hours. Well, that might have happened. I don't remember. Because once I'm done, once the fifth step is over with and they're gone, it's gone. You know, I learned that very early. The tragedy is anybody that does a fifth step with somebody else and goes and repeats what was said, that's horrible. That's a horrible, horrible thing to do. And it's been done many times in the program. And the women left the program and never came back. So you just have to be very careful who you're sharing your fifth step with. And be very careful when you're doing your fourth step that nobody finds it, because you could hurt them. You know, you could hurt them if they got into seeing and reading about your feelings and, you know, how you dealt with things and the things that you did that nobody else knew about. So, you're welcome.
I probably don't need that.
So the speaker can pick up.
Oh, for Kevin, I see. Anyway, hi, I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic.
I wanted to ask you, when I did my first four step, my sponsor had told me it was very important not to write all the negativity down, but to balance it out with some positiveness too, yeah, so that you don't come out of it feeling so guilty and depressed over what you're writing down, because it could affect you. And it started doing that to me, and then I said, oh yeah, I gotta write some positive stuff down too. So mm-hmm, it worked out pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then on the fifth step, what I really liked about it is we went outside and we put it in a can and we burnt it and lifted it up to God, and I thought that was pretty cool. Do you have any other suggestions? I'm about to do another fourth step. It'll be my fourth one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in 9 years. So,
oh, yeah, that's wonderful.
But I find doing a fourth step, if you're going through a bad spot in life at the time and you're feeling uneasy, it's a good time to do a fourth step to take and look at where you're at.
Right.
You know? But it's very helpful.
Oh, yeah. You can do it. I do it. I don't know. I do it at least maybe 2-3 times a year. I mean, I'm going to be in the middle of one right now because of how I reacted on Tuesday night. I'm going to do a fourth step and find out what am I missing in my sobriety right now? You know, what's going on inside of me right now?
What it is.
Yeah.
As my sponsor would say, he drove me nuts. He said, once you do a fourth step, you'll find out what it is.
Yes.
He says, you'll see.
Yes.
And it was fear that ran rampant in my life is what was directed me in every aspect of my life, and I had no idea it did.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Dear.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say or ask. It's like a cleansing.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's like a cleansing. That's what you need too after mm-hmm. Tuesday. See, that old defect of self can come out at any time, no matter how many years you have in sobriety.
Right.
That's why we keep coming back to these rooms, you know, so we can identify mm-hmm. where we're at or what we're dealing with, because we're human.
Yep.
Everybody's perfect, and we know what happened to the last person that was perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Hi, Beverly. I'm Jeannie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeannie.
I got a strange question, but could you have a resentment against yourself?
I have a resentment against you.
Can you, or?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You can. Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely you can. If you have to, again, write it out. What is it? What is it about you that you resent? That's what I have to look at right now. Because that was a resentment Tuesday night, and I don't know why.
Okay.
She's my friend. She's my friend, so I have to look at it and see what, you know. And I'm not going to blame it on old age, you know. I'm not going to blame it on that, because I have a sound mind. I know I do.
Right.
I might forget things, but I have a sound mind.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jean.
I was just curious to see, now that you understand, are you doing it the big book way this time, or are you going to go back and do it?
No, I'm doing it the way I've always done it. I'm doing it the way I've always done it. You know, Joe and Charlie Tapes, they're two men, and it's their opinion. You know, it's not AA, it's opinion, it's their opinion. And they don't think that you should get into all the nitty-gritty of your life. You know, you talk about who you resent, why you resent them, and what part did you have in it. But they didn't say that I should put the nameless faces down. You know what I'm saying? To put things down that, because it doesn't have anything to do with the moral inventory. Well, to me it does. To me it did. And but I understand what they're doing, but I don't know whether in my case it would have worked just being general. You know, if you read the big book, go back and read it, you know, because they talk about the resentment, the anger, the fear, the sex. They talk about those things. But I didn't understand it, and neither did my sponsor, so I did it my way. Now, today, if I was working with the girl who was going to take the fourth step, I would show her how the big book describes it, because this is our Bible, you know. So I would never say to anybody, you need to do more. No, because God's in charge. You know, if you have the willingness to do the fourth step, He's going to direct you, not your sponsor. You know, your sponsor's there to answer questions. Your sponsor's there to, encourage you. But she can't tell you how to do your inventory. And the big book is very, very good. I understand it today. But the way I did it, it went much deeper than that. Much deeper. And when you read it, have you done your fourth step yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Twice, good, okay. Because that's really the same as the tenth step. You know, if you see something go on in your life, like Tuesday for me, and you have to take a personal inventory, and when you're wrong, promptly admit it. And as soon as the 24 hours was up, I knew it was me. So therefore, I did what I had to do as far as the tenth step is concerned. But now I want to do a little writing to find out what's going on in my head. You know, what's going on in my head? You know, and maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe my resentment is I'm doing things that I don't really want to do. And maybe, who knows, you know. So I'll find it out. Well, next week I'll let you know.
Oh, Bill. Bill. Yes. How many times have you done the fourth step?
Probably many, 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 many times in 42 years, Joe. Many, many, many times.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
How many times?
I have to. We all have, probably.
Yeah.
I make mistakes in sobriety.
Yeah.
Just like I do when I'm drinking.
Yep.
Of course, drinking is worse.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Joe, by the way. I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, good job.
Thank you, Beverly.
Okay, you're welcome.